morning, everybody. Thanks so much for being here for this session. Just a little quick clarification. I'm not co-PI of the Black Women's Health Study. I'm just a co-PI of this analysis that I'll be discussing. So if you have any questions about data or access to our resources, I can give you the names of our PIs and our website at the end of my talk. So what I'll be talking about is an analysis of sulfurated health in our study, the Black Women's Health Study, which Terry has kind of started to describe for you, Dr. Wright. I have no disclosures. And I'll talk a little bit about sulfurated health and then how the Black Women's Health Study was started, how it's organized, how we looked at the data, and what we found, and then what we think it might mean and what we might want to do next. So, like Dr. Wright alluded to, for decades there's been data and research, biomedical research, but for a long time, no women were included. It was just assumed that whatever worked for men would work for women. And then women started to be included, but again, there weren't women of color. There weren't Arabic women. There weren't Hispanic women. There weren't Black women. And so it was important to start to think about, you know, if we have a population that is a diverse population, we need to understand what's going on with everybody in order to have a healthier nation and in order to do medical and biomedical research to improve health and extend healthy lives for everyone. And sulfurated health is one interesting measure to do that because it's a global measure of health, and it's been found to be a validated measure of morbidity and mortality across populations. And it's something that's very easy to ask. You know, in general, or compared to people your age, how would you rate your health? How healthy do you feel? How do you think you feel? You know, those sorts of things, which is something very easy to ask people. Asking people for medical records or serum samples is difficult, and you can't get quite as many responses. So we thought that we would look at sulfurated health in the Black Women's Health Study because we have a lot of women, and we have a lot of data on these women for 20 years. So we thought it might be a good opportunity to kind of tease apart what's going on with health with a validated measure. So the Black Women's Health Study has been funded by the National Institutes of Health, specifically the National Cancer Institute, since 1995, where we mailed a health questionnaire to a purchase list of subscribers from Essence Magazine and also members of some professional organizations of Black women, nurses, teachers, et cetera, and also kind of had a snowball approach by contacting friends and relatives of early responders. So what we kind of got once we had our initial enrollment was a cohort of about 59,000 women who were adults, who self-identified as Black, and completed the questionnaire. Over time, we've gathered a lot of information about these women, about medical diagnoses, about diet, about income, and we've been able to do a lot of work on a lot of issues. So I encourage you, if you're not familiar with your study, go on our website, get familiar, see what we're doing. If you have ideas, contact us. We'd love to do whatever we can to push the boundaries and to really get Black women's health along with Black Women's Health Imperative on the agenda, make sure people are paying attention to what women are offering the world, their data, their lives, you know, in these questionnaires to help do more for women of their generation and future generations. So for our analytic samples, since we have all these women, we focused on the year 2011, which is when we first asked these questions about sulfurated health. So any of the women who completed this 2011 questionnaire and answered the primary outcome, which was overall sulfurated health, were included in the analysis. So we focused on, like, the first question you see here in pink, number 30, that was our measure of overall sulfurated health. The question, in general, would you say your health is excellent, very good, good, fair, or poor? And that's kind of a five Likert scale of five levels that tends to be used commonly. We also ask, you know, how would you rate your physical health? How would you rate your mental health? And then in order to kind of get at social health and social functioning, we asked, please rate how well you carry out your usual social activities and roles at home, at work, your community, and responsibilities as a parent, child, spouse, employee, friend, etc. You know, how women felt like they were functioning in their world as the measure of self-rated health. Like I said, we have a lot of information, but for this kind of preliminary analysis, we focused on kind of three domains. And the variables for those you see here. So our first domain was socioeconomics and demographics, where we looked at marital status, educational attainment, household income, neighborhood socioeconomic status, and also geographic region of residence, because we have women from all over the country. For kind of lifestyle factors, we looked at body mass index, walking for exercise, pace of walking, vigorous physical activity, cigarette smoking, the presence of a major health condition, dash dietary pattern. And then for psychosocial factors, we looked at caregiving responsibilities, using religion or spirituality to cope with stressful situations, experience of interpersonal racism, which we use the Williams score there, experience of institutional racism, and then out of that institutional racism, we also look specifically at job-related racism. We looked at all these factors and data from questionnaires before 2011, so it's kind of a prospective analysis, even though it doesn't account for follow-up time. We're able to make risk ratios for exposures that occurred before the outcome. So, what did we find? What you see here is just kind of, I'm going to give examples of some of the things that we found, some of the strongest relationships. And kind of unsurprisingly, we found that women whose household incomes are greater than $100,000 per year compared to women whose household incomes were less than or equal to $25,000 per year were much more likely to report having excellent or very good health compared to women who reported having fair or poor health. And we found this kind of a similar pattern for overall health and physical health, that they tended to have stronger relationships than those that were observed for mental and social health. We found a similar pattern to household income for education, where women who had 17 or more years of education, meaning that they had some graduate or professional education beyond a college degree, were more likely to report excellent or very good health than women who had a high school education or a GED or fewer years of education. And household income and education are really important variables for our study because compared to a lot of studies that include African Americans, we have a wide variability in household income and in educational and educational attainment, whereas a lot of studies of African Americans have mostly lower household income, lower education, very lower SES, and maybe a little bit of a middle. And because we have this wide variability, we're able to pick up patterns as opposed to just kind of repeating a lot of what you hear about black people in research and in the media. For lifestyle factors, body mass index, here we're comparing women with a body mass index of less than 25, meaning they're in normal weight or underweight, compared to women who have a BMI greater than or equal to 35, which is an upper class of obesity. The women who had a lower body mass index, kind of not surprisingly, were more likely to report better self-rated health. We found very interestingly that pace of walking, where brisk being, you know, 3 miles or more quickly, compared to a casual pace of walking, which is less than 2 miles, brisk walking was strongly associated with better self-rated health. And then this last measure, a major health condition, that the women who had not reported a health condition over the course of follow-up also reported better health. Importantly, when we looked at the psychosocial factors, the first for caregiving responsibilities, we had women who had no caregiving responsibilities, women who cared for just the child, women who cared for a parent or an adult, and the women who were kind of in that sandwich generation where they were giving care for children as well as adults. And we found that having no caregiving responsibilities, those women were more likely to report better self-rated health compared to women who were caring for both a child and an adult. When we looked at interpersonal racism, and this score measures things like people seem as though they're afraid of you, you receive poor service, people act as though you're not intelligent. It's a weighted score of several measures. We found that the women who are experiencing the least amount of interpersonal racism, again, were reporting better self-rated health. We also thought it was important to look at these factors because when you look at interpersonal racism, this is kind of the first factor where you're seeing a little bit more similarity across all four outcomes that we looked at. So we wanted to think some more about what might be different about these psychosocial factors, these things that are kind of measuring how women feel like they're interacting with their world and how women feel like they're functioning in their emotions and in their mind. And so we looked back at some of these factors and kind of looked at them in combination, looked at and multivariable models where we're doing a little bit of adjustment, because most of the models we use were just age adjusted, and I'll talk about that a little bit more later. And we found that when we stratified by socioeconomic status, presence or absence of a mental health condition, that these factors seemed even stronger among the women who had lower socioeconomic status or the women who had a major health condition. And so we're saying there's something that's going on there, that these psychosocial factors are having much more of an impact among the women who are dealing with these other issues. And we'd like to follow that up and have a greater understanding of what that might mean. So many of the variables that I showed you in the three domains, we know that there's a relationship between them. We know that in a lot of data you see there's an association or a correlation between variables of socioeconomic status and body mass index and diet and caregiving burden. And so we wanted to see what happens when you add some to the model. We wanted to pay attention to not kind of explain away our findings, but to give a better picture of what our findings really meant in the context of people not living in a vacuum of just one variable at one time. And what we found is that just kind of building kind of a multivariable model, we did see strong associations remaining for household income, education, body mass index, and pace of walking. Again, with this kind of brisk walking compared with to a more casual pace of walking. So I know that was really fast going through, but we really kind of want to focus on what the message might be from this. And we have a lot of information, like we said, from the Black Women's Health Study, and so often the message is, black people are fat and they eat bad and they are in bad neighborhoods, and so it's just kind of how it is because we're not going to upend our economic structure. But what we found in the Black Women's Health Study is that we're able to identify kind of small changes that are attainable. And even, you know, we've done analyses of, like, diabetes and cancer and stuff, and we found, like, adding fiber reduces your risk. And it's important to kind of find those things that women can do something about. So when we're reporting our information back to our participants in our newsletter, it isn't always gloom and doom, you know, but it's that their data really is showing what we can do to have better health. And what we found in these analyses is that walking more quickly or managing weight or body mass index more or reducing body mass index, these are things that you can do to kind of manage your health, to improve your self-rated health in multiple ways, not just having being healthier on your medical records, but feeling healthier in your body, in your mind, and functioning healthier in your community and in your family. We also observed that caregiving responsibilities and experiences of interpersonal racism have an influence not just on the mind, but also on the body and on the overall health, the global measure of how someone thinks and feels about themselves, not thinking about those things. Sometimes these things just happen because this is how life is. But what we're seeing is that how you're experiencing life really is affecting all of you. We want to be all of you as a person, and we want to understand what we can do to make it healthier if we're not able to upend the different structures that are causing stress on women. So going from this work, it's going to be important to think more about how women are thinking about health when we ask these questions. What are women thinking of? Is it just kind of a reflection of how they feel that day? Do they take time to sit and think about, how do I function as a part of my family, my community, or as a spouse, or as a caregiver? And what that means, are there things that are actionable that we can pull from there? We also want to explore the value of health to women and to communities, and communities where women are functioning. We know that there's kind of been a vacuum sucking out a lot of men in different communities to where women are carrying a lot of the load in the family, in the community, in the social structure of churches or community advocacy groups, and what does it mean for the women to be healthy? What does it mean for those communities in those situations? And I believe Dr. Benitez will be talking some about that as well. And we also want to identify ways to help any woman be a healthy woman. Like I said, increasing pace of walking, not everybody can just drop 20 pounds or 40 pounds or whatever to lower their BMI. So what are some things that are attainable for women given the structures that they may be confined by whether it's transportation, whether it's caregiving responsibilities. If you need to go to a grocery store that's not nearby and you have people to care for it, change the amount of time that's available to make these changes. So given, you know, what are some things that we can find out of the data or out of other evidence-based practice that we can suggest to women so that any woman is informed enough to make her choices of how to feel healthy? So just, you know, want to thank all of our participants always for being so generous and so consistent over the 20 years of the study. Our funding from NCI, all of our research teams and staff and the PIs that are at Boston University and also Georgetown University, and the Black Women's Health Imperative for supporting the analyses that I've been discussing today. We're on Facebook, yay, so you can all like us or follow us to kind of see what we're doing, and particularly this video where our advisory board talks about why it was so important for them to be a part of this study and why it's important that it continues. And also our website at BU is www.bu.edu/BWHS. If you want any information about the study, feel free to go to our website or to email me or hit me up on Twitter. My info is on the first slide. So I'm all done. Do you have any questions? Have a few minutes for questions? Okay, great.
We do have a few minutes for questions. Clarification.
I hope I didn't talk too fast for you to understand what I was saying.
So we'll go with the gentleman and then Leslie in the back.
We have it for this analysis. For some of our research, we've either pulled our data or compared our data with the Nurses Health Study, which has is a large cohort that's been going on for, if they're in their third generation of the study at this point. And we haven't really spent as much time on self-rated health. Like I said, we started in 2011 with this question, so we're still teasing it apart. We've asked it again, and so we'll be able to see changes, which we think will be really informative going ahead. We've also done some collaborations on breast cancer with a study of Latinas, a case-control study of Latinas, and so we're trying to start doing some of that work now, but not to always use white women as the reference group. Which has been a challenge, particularly around getting funding, the need for a reference group, a white population as a reference group has been a challenge. So something we're working on, and I hope, you know, next time you hear about the study, we'll have some more to talk about on that question.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a low prevalence of alcohol use and cigarette smoking in our study, so it wasn't something that we looked at this stage of these preliminary analyses. We focused on things that we have seen something for in other analyses because we know those variables are functioning properly. We haven't published as much on alcohol consumption. We know there is some, but it's so low, it'd be less likely for us to have the power to see something if it was there. We'll probably look at it in the future just as we're following up.
But what about other drugs? I mean, it could be over-the-counter. It could be other drugs. I mean, not just alcohol.
We don't ask about illicit drug use. We do have information about at all. Okay. We do have some information about self-reported information about medications. Mm-hmm. We could look at medications in the future. We have information on antidepressants. We have information on metformin. And insulin, we have information on hypertensive drugs, so it is something, and also aspirin and NSAIDs, so it is something we could look at in the future. That would be important to look at, especially if we're following up our findings about major health conditions. It would be something important to consider. Thank you.
Good question. Yes, ma'am?
We have not asked that question in the Black Women's Health Study. The two sister study in run by Dale Sander in NIEHS that's looking at breast cancer. They've asked several questions about gender. I believe they've asked about gender identity and also sexual orientation. So they have a better data set. We haven't approached that with our group. particularly because of the generation that we have. When we've tested different questions and spoken with our participant advisory group or executive board, there are some questions that they thought wouldn't be wise to go forward with.
Can you speak a little bit louder so everybody can help you, please? We hear you, or you can use the mic.
Okay, all right.
Just a little bit louder then, okay? Thank you. You have to repeat the question because I'm sure people back there didn't hear her.
So the question was asking if we have information on family history and have kind of done some diagramming to look at family history across generations. And the second part of the question was asking if we've looked more deeply into mental health or mental health conditions or diagnoses to really understand what women might be struggling with or, you know, persevering with. as they go about their daily lives. So we do have information on family history of certain cancers, and for breast cancer and I believe ovarian cancer, a measure of age of diagnosis. But few of our participants are cases where we have like mothers and daughters or mothers and daughters and granddaughters because of the age groups we were using and how long the study's been going on. So we're not able to look at families over the course of time. There are some studies that may be able to do that, like the Omni cohort from Framingham Heart Study, where they have spent time recruiting and including more diverse population of families that they're following over time. We do have some information from the participants that provided genetic samples, kind of what might be going on from a genetic level, but I'm not as familiar with that part of the research. The second part, we haven't asked extensive questions about like mental health diagnoses. Some women do self-report when they have a new diagnosis because we have the option of them filling in things we haven't specifically asked about. We have asked about depression. We have asked about depression with medication. We also have asked a perceived stress scale at one point in time, and we've asked the CESD score, which is a measure of depressive symptoms. We've asked that more than once. We've done some analysis of CESD score. And I believe it was 2001 we asked about abuse at different periods of time within the last year, during childhood, during adolescence, and as an adult. And we asked about physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, so we tried also to get at emotional abuse at different points in time, and we've looked at that for a couple analyses as well.
So would those be available? You sort of got to finish the sentence. So if you've done the analysis, are they available?
So we haven't done those analyses related to self-rated health, which I've talked about today. Okay. We have done those analyses, I believe, Dr. Lauren Wise, she's done a lot of work on fibroids, and she's done a lot of work looking at psychosocial factors and risk of fibroids. So those publications, I believe, are available on our website. Those are things we could look at in the future in relationship with self-rated health because they were asked before 2011. So it's something we could definitely follow up on.
Okay, so we're going to say thank you very much. And we'll go to Dr. Benitez and try to moderate so we'll have questions.